you like conversation on a variety of topics? Feel like no one wants to talk about the things that interest you? Tired of only hearing the same political, sports, or catastrophe talk? Yeah, we feel that way too. Join two high-functioning geeks as they discuss just about anything under the sun. We can't tell you what we'll be talking about each week because we don't know where our brains will take us. It will be an interesting conversation, though, so hang on and join us. Here comes the Relentless Geekery.
Brought to you by Mind Architecture. Building worlds for your mind.
Bang, biff, boom. Oh, can't hear you.
I cannot hear you.
Okay.
No, I can't. Okay.
Good to go.
Don't need the reactions. All right. Yes. Having been to the fan expo here in Cleveland, I had to get with the comic book background, Biff Bam Pow. So, yes. So you went to the Cares for Scares. I'm sorry.
Yes.
How cool was that?
Yeah. It's the same one I went to last year. I got to talk to Jeff Strand again, and lots of good authors. Had a good time. Went to a couple things I didn't get to go to last year because last year I like rushed in and rushed out, you know, stayed longer. So lots of books. I mean, if you like horror, it's the place to get horror books. Let me tell you,
very good.
Way more than.
Not film, not television, more books.
Yes, absolutely. Though they did have an independent horror film festival going that you could drop in and just watch, you know, movies anywhere from 10-minute movies to an hour-long movies.
Interesting.
That were playing, yeah.
There. Not quite a plug, but yes, my drug of choice.
So. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fun weekend. I enjoyed it. Williamsburg's very nice. You know, so yeah. Nothing super. I mean, if you've been to any of those type of conventions, you know how they are. Lots of tables, lots of authors, lots of them still make the same mistake. It's like, oh, hey, come here. Oh, you like horror? Well, yeah, that's why I'm at a horror convention. Right. You know, well, let me tell you about my book. And then it's like a 5-book series and they spend 5 minutes telling you the whole plot of each book. And I'm like, okay. It's the same rules as Amazon. If the cover doesn't make me click it, if the cover doesn't make me come up and like pick it up, don't give me everything. Cause now I want to get away from you.
Right. It's funny. People must know that they have to perfect the elevator pitch, right? If you've got someone that you're in the elevator for a minute, you need to make a sale in a minute.
You would think so enough.
And yet, I don't know, maybe they're just not. Some writers, they don't come out in public a lot, or they just haven't.
Well,
they don't know how to gauge their success. You know, if you try different things and you sell 5 copies here or 20 copies here, then you'd think you'd do more of the 20, right?
Yeah,
you
know? But I'm finding out more and more that not everybody thinks that way. Me and Casey discovered that with the soap stuff. I think a lot of what it is hard to write a book. It can take a long time, especially if you have a family and you have a job and you got to mow the lawn and go grocery shopping. And, you know, right. It can be really
you're doing
hard
it at 5 a.m. or 11 p.m. It's your own like secret personal thing.
Yeah.
I can see bringing it out to the world is not a natural progression. You know what
right.
I mean?
And then you start that, you know, authors get desperate. It's like, well, I just spent $150 for this table. I got to sell a lot of books to make that up. So it's like everybody going by, come here. Yeah. It's like a barker, you know, come here, shoot the water gun and make the clown's balloon pop.
Exactly.
Just pop one dart with the balloon, you know, it doesn't work. That's not the thing. You still have to draw them in. I mean, I was talking to Jeff and his girlfriend and I'm like, look, you guys have written a lot more than I have. You've got so many books sitting here on the table. You know, just me walking around, me doing a couple events, you know, I've told other authors, but they don't want to listen to me. And this is why I'm not here is you can't sit there with one book and expect people to walk up and be interested. It doesn't work. You know, and if you're sitting at your table, don't be sitting there on your phone and ignoring people. No, you won't make a sale.
Boy, howdy. In contrast, I went to Fan Expo and
yes.
I had a huge show floor and there's some beautiful booth setups, but there's some where there's so much stuff like hanging and they're behind what's hanging that there's like not as enough human interaction. And Sometimes they're on their phone. Sometimes they're eating their lunch. I get all that. And yet, like, that's not the way to make a sale. It's not even the way just to get a conversation going. You know what I mean? So I don't know, maybe even more than horror, you know, if Fan Expo is mostly nerds, geeks, people that
pop
are
culture.
Shyer, you know, ish, more shy than they keep to themselves a lot. They like doing the reading and the books. And so I know I'm jumping around. One of the things I noticed about Fan Expo is it's far, far from being sales of comic books and books and stuff like that. There's all kinds of trinkets. You know what I mean? People, and I guess because they sell, there's all kinds of lightsabers. There's all kinds of different like earrings and little pens and all that kind of stuff. And so maybe that's kind of almost a craft mentality more than it is the geekery mentality, even if the theme is geekery. I have very nice conversations with some people, and some I would like step up to the booth and I didn't get a reaction from them and I just kept moving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In some cases, what they had displayed was interesting enough. They would say, hey, tell me about this squid. You know what I mean? Like, because I get, you know, like, okay, nobody else has squids here. Tell me about your cosmic squid display, you know, that kind of thing. We found I spoke on Sunday. Colleen accompanied me as my AV runner while I talked. So, and we found her nice little like star earrings, you know. Nice. So I'm all on the lookout for that. There's amongst all that stuff, there's some things that are just the right level of amusement and beauty and price point that sure, why not get a pair of earrings? I invested in the start of the Hellman Elementary series, which is a YA series, but it looked pretty good. I bought the Kobolds Ate My Baby, if I remember right, a game, you know, that was like a game as a book. So having said that, I really spent less than I have in the past because I really am getting to that place of it has to really stand out. It has to be different than what I've seen before. So I stopped by at our friend Ted Sikora's booth and had all of his good Apama and Punchline and Tap Dance Killer and Violante. That's his latest character. And in fact, a cool... the Craftsmanship Cup was how they did the cosplay parade this year. And so it really was kind of like, not invitational, but they definitely vetted people. You know what I mean? They made sure that for the novice, journeyman, and expert levels, everything was really of high quality. And a woman cosplaying Violante won one of the prizes. So that's nice. So that was feather in Ted's cap. And I was able to talk about that with him the next day. Had a chance to talk to Greg Land, who like is a wonderful artist. I've loved him for decades. And especially like, he's one of the guys known for like good girl art. His women are beautiful. And there his work is like photorealistic. So he's done great work with X-Men I should be able to just roll off titles. He's a great cover artist that often he'll do the cover for various different things. And it is out of all those things that are on the racks in a comic book store, your eye will go to that because it looks beautiful.
Right.
You know what I mean? So let's see who else. Yannick Paquette, they had a couple sketch offs where, you know, there's two artists.
I saw that. Yeah.
They're very fun. And like, it's just very cool. You know, they actually have a little, one of those cameras that comes out and captures what's going on underneath. So you can like see them doing work. And I really am so much not an artist that every time that someone just starts off with a blank sheet and whoop, hey, that looks like Doc Savage. Like the fact that they can do that is just continual wonder.
It's magic.
Astonishment to me. And I suggested Eclipso, for instance, because of the eclipse just having happened. And they did good Eclipso sketches, but I did not win either one of them. They raffled them, not raffle. Well, I guess like a door prize off at the end. And so people got their favorite, like a combination of Godzilla and a Pokemon character that looked really good. Remender, something like that. Not Remender, who was good. Nice. Remender. So that was fun. Just to like, and also they're doing it like, while they're answering questions and talking to the audience. So like they have this hand memory that just lets them create this perfect sketch of, I just love that. So that's a very cool thing. Let's see. I did my talk on the sun, the moon, solar eclipses, and superheroes. And it just, again, seemed wonderfully timely. You know what I mean? Having just had the eclipse Monday of last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was well received. It was 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. And so oftentimes that can be, well, if people tied one on Saturday night or just are already exhausted from 2 days of conning. But I had probably 40 people there, you know, 35 to 40 people, a medium-sized room, and it was loaded with people. Attentive, asked good questions, stayed with me till the very end. I really motor mouth. You know that I motor mouth anyway, but because I had specifically said, please don't put me opposite Alan Tudyk because I want to see him. Well, he was at 11:45 and I was at 11. And so if I was going to hie my way over to the main theater and get a seat where I could like be in his presence. So that's what I did. I just really got through my presentation in a way that it was never rude, but I sure didn't pause appreciatively of what I was saying. I just kept going. So they keep, you know, I keep offering and they keep letting me come back. And the value, of course, is I get a programming pass for the weekend, so I get in free. And because Colleen ran my AV, I got one for her as well. And in fact, if ever we do a Relentless Geekery podcast or anything like that, you would be able to all get in.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
The reasonable for what's a pass nowadays, maybe like starting at 80 and going to 120, depending on time.
Oh, is that
that's
what they are?
Reasonable price for me for all the prep of doing a presentation and then an hour of my work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also the programming badge, like, gets you treated slightly different than the madding crowd, you know? So when I go up to go into the various different presentations, like, oh, you can go right in, you know? So, but having said that, that wasn't the case for certain things where they really want to make sure that people, they had a thing, a very cool thing, the Lord of the Rings, all four Hobbits were here at this convention. And they actually had a very cool four-person panel and interview. And that was actually an extra cost ticket. And it was later on Saturday night. And when I saw the lines of it was just probably three quarters of the con were going to be there. And I'm going to be like, they weren't going to let programming in early. We had to go all the way back to the if we have extra seats line. And I was like, if there's an extra seat, it's going to be back behind the column, right, next to the emergency exit door. And I bailed. I can't believe I did it because I really would have liked to have seen that cool Lord of the Rings reunion.
Right.
And yet, you know what I mean? I was done from a whole day of paying attention. And it's kind of funny. I don't know if you get this. I really pay attention to everything that's being said and done by everybody around me. And it kind of drains me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? While I'm doing it, I'm just totally energized. But when I get home, and often after a whole weekend's worth of it, I'm like, okay, I just need quiet and, you know, not quite dark and go into a little, you know, cocoon or something like that, but that the day can drain me. I guess that's, we've talked about this before. One of the definitions of introvert versus extrovert is not only how good are you at it, because I'm pretty good with friends and public and stuff, but it's whether it gives you energy or it takes energy.
Right.
And I found it on balance because I am hyper stimulated. I really listen to everything and I join in and out of various different conversations because my mind can do that. It can do multi-threading in that way. Well, after a while, your brain juice is gone. You know what I mean? You
right.
Gotta just get unstimulated.
Right. Right. So I did get to meet a couple horror authors that are bigger names. I don't know if you recognize, Grady Hendrix was one of them. He's lighthearted. I mean, the books he's got out right now are How to Sell a Haunted House. And the other one is The Final Girl Support Group, which is pretty good. The first one I read was
a horror reference. That's so
yes,
funny.
Okay. And the other one I read was The Southern Book Club's Guide to Killing Vampires. And it's about this book club, this women's book club that get together and they realize that there's a vampire living in their town and how they take care of it.
Very cool.
So yeah. And then I met Paul Tremblay, who is another horror writer. I know my friend Jay interviewed him a couple times. He just had the book that they turned into the Shyamalan movie, Knock at the Cabin Door.
Yes, exactly. That's so cool. Okay. Yeah.
So me and Reese are going to read the book and watch the movie and then compare what they are.
Exactly.
And the thing is, watching the movie at the end, I said, you know what? That ending just does not feel like it's the right ending. And I asked Paul, I said, so I haven't read the book, but I saw the movie. Did they change the ending? He says, oh yeah, my ending is completely different than what they did with the movie.
And so, most probably better, unfortunately, but somehow it didn't
probably
with the studio heads or something like that.
But okay, it'll be interesting to see if I enjoy the ending and it makes the story itself better as opposed to the movie, which I thought was pretty M. Night. Yeah, it was okay.
Okay. Because yeah, that if they're, you know, the characteristic of every M. Night Shyamalan movie is the big twist.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, okay.
Yeah. Cool. And so it's also interesting I want to see if it holds up that same way in the book, because, you know, he didn't write the book with the intention of M. Night putting it out. So does it just reflect what is normally done with the movies, or, you know, what they do? So it'll be interesting. Yeah.
There are often conversations, you know, from authors that say they asked me on as a consultant, and so I was able to guide them as to here's not only what happened, but why. And then it seems to have been sometimes they diverge quite a bit, like with the Game of Thrones series. You know what I mean? Season 8 is now not looked at favorably because it got ahead of where he was writing, and so it couldn't stay with exactly the characterizations and the events and whatever he has in his mind. If that last book finally comes out, it'll be an interesting time to live in, that even with all the overhead of TV production and the money and everything involved, it's still, they were able to get that done quicker than George Martin could finish his series. So that's kind of an odd thing.
You just referenced that old Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times, the curse exactly. Proverb.
I will share this. So they had wonderful interviews with various different people, and some people they have are better interviewers than others. So Richard, who is the guy that first, I think I told you this story before, you know, I was at a talk where they were talking about, hey, best of Marvel in DC, and the people that they had up on stage were like all quite young, and they weren't referencing any of the classic stuff. And so at one point I said, well, man, you're leaving out the entire like Fantastic Four 30 to 40, where the creation of the Inhumans, the creation of the Frightful Four, and like just kind of ran through it. And he said, why don't you come up on here on stage, because you really know your stuff. And honestly, they were very welcoming. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes, like, if I wasn't heckling, but sometimes that's what they do, is they treat you like, oh, you know it all, come up here. Instead, that's what started my talking, at least here in Cleveland, because I had kind of shown that I had the chops to be able to talk about all this kind of stuff. So he's now kind of graduated to being the main interviewer of the various different celebrities, and good for him, because he's really good at it. He really listens, and he really doesn't just run down the list of his questions. He follows up when they say something interesting, and it's a good, very good back and forth. Nice. Another woman they had, Crystal, was more of what I just said, a little more scripted and enthusiastic, but just didn't seem to create that intimacy that you really get wonderful responses from various different for people. So Alan Tudyk really was great and hilarious. I've never seen him. Of course, many questions about Resident Alien, going back to Firefly and going back to A Knight's Tale. You know what I mean? Where he one of his favorite lines is, I'm going to make your entrails into X-trails, you know, which everybody in the audience seemed to know. And I didn't remember that one in particular. So that's cool. He carries to cons with him a bag of crap. He calls it, I think, his bag of shit, but he softened that for the kids. But it's things that he's just picked up from all throughout his career. And so you really can get like, well, here's a key card for my hotel in London. Here's the cue sheet that we used for an episode of Firefly. It's like real, you know what I mean? And, nice. And so he signs them and gives them out. When people ask questions from the audience, they get this little prize for doing that. And he was fantastic in terms of how quick he was, how playful he was with the audience. He's very well spoken. He's multi-talented. As you know, we laughed about, he's the guy that did the dance choreography for the Peacemaker thing, and all different. So he was probably the delight for the weekend. Saw Sean Astin, and I'll tell you, sometimes people inhabit roles so well that you kind of think that's who they are. And he's played a number like Rudy of maybe not the quickest guy. He was wonderfully quick and wonderfully like empathic. You know, how he talks about his craft and what he wants to do in the world is very much make it a better place. And so I was much more surprised and impressed by him than I expected to be. Rose McGowan was good. She's been really maltreated by the world because they kind of said too beautiful to be smart. You know what I mean? That she's kind of vacant, and maybe because this happens often in society now, you know, if you stand up like as if you were a human being, not just a woman, they treat you like you're a bitch. And she's not. She just didn't take the usual studio couch crap, the getting paid a third of what the lead actor crap. So she's been marked as difficult, but all of her stories from behind the scenes and kind of what led to some of those things, she's actually a very good, strong, interesting lady. Even if she, like, her movie choices have not always been the great. She's been in some clinkers and stinkers, but she's also been in some great movies. And so that was, I really like to be surprised. You know, sometimes when I go to see, I don't know, William Shatner, you kind of know what you're going to get, even though you're happy to be in the presence of someone who's that part of the science fiction firmament.
He's going to be at Hartville this weekend, I believe.
Very cool. Exactly. I know there's a couple other great ones that I can't remember offhand.
Now, real quick on Rose McGowan. So I remember her first when she replaced Shannon Doherty on the old Charm series.
Exactly. And she talked a lot about that. That's a real difficult situation to be in.
Yeah.
You're actually replacing someone in a beloved series and you're kind of seen as maybe the interloper or the lesser, what I mean? Why was she brought on? How did she get that job? Wink, wink. You know what I mean?
Right.
And instead, she talked about how she created a character that really was able to hold its own against everything else that was going on, and that the fan, like, the tide turned and they were like, she's perfect for this. Yeah. She was really great in that role, and very much viewership went up instead of down. It wasn't like sometimes when you get Charlie's Angels and then three of the three original angels are all gone by the end.
The,
you know?
Duke Boy's cousins.
Like that, exactly. So that she had lots to say about Charmed, and this is kind of weird, audience members, when they ask questions, some are really good with, I really like your work and here's my question, and others have to give their little testimonial as to how you changed my life and that kind of stuff, and it can be very affecting. But if you've only got the last 20 minutes for questions and they've taken up 17 of the freaking minutes,
shut up,
let go of the mic. Even when let's see, who was it that gave me? It was Sean Astin that gave the challenge of, okay, lightning round. Quick question, quick answer. We'll get through as many of these we can and clear the queue. Nobody's in line that wants to be not able to ask their question. And then somebody, the next person after he said that, did the ramble. And like, why didn't everybody in the line say, shut up and get out of line because you're already broken the rules? Why didn't the wrangler, Crystal, say, did you not hear anything of what Sean Astin just made the request of you? And so Colleen and I are there kind of like looking at each other. I don't know. They, I guess in some cases they're shy, but they've mustered up the courage to get in line and they've kind of like practiced it and they don't want to give up. One person even said, she just asked my question, but I'm going to, and like asked it again. And like, did you like, you, we've talked about this. There are some people, maybe we overuse this phrase, but sometimes it's really true. They're on the spectrum and they're like a little press play. If you talk about hot and sour soup, they can't help but launch into their hot and sour soup story. That's just the way it is. Their brain is wired to stimulus response wise, do the thing.
Right.
We saw some evidence of that.
I had that same thing. And you understand this part of it. It was a panel of like 5-6 authors and the title was Vintage Horror. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Let's go talk about old horror books, old horror movies, vintage horror. I'm into that. And Jeff Strand was on it. So I'm like, cool. I'll go check him out. Which, by the way, it was really weird because he was born on the 14th of December and I'm the 16th. That's one of the things I bugged him about. But his girlfriend was the 12th of December. So 12, 14,
a whole pack
16.
Of you. That's very fun. Okay.
Yeah. Quirkle.
What does that make you all? Are you like, Sagittarius?
I'm Sagittarius.
A horror realm. You know what I
mean? Yeah. So anyway, so they're on this thing and all the authors talk about who they are, what they write, and then like their best memory or something like that was the first thing. And then it went off the freaking rails from there. And I even texted his girlfriend. I said, Bridget, what the hell is happening? This panel needs way more Jeff because he didn't say anything the rest of the time. There was one lady that was like 74 years old, wrote horror, and she kind of monopolized it and started taking over and it went in a different direction. And then this other guy popped in and he looked like my cousin, Rob Drake. He looked just like him. And he started answering. It was those two back and forth, like 90% of the time. And they started talking about writers and how to write and stuff. And I'm like, this isn't a writer panel. Yes. Everybody on there is a writer. There's probably 50% writers in the audience. But it's about vintage horror, and finally, the last
title.
In the last 5 minutes, she goes, so why don't we talk about vintage movie horror since we've talked about, and I'm like, why don't you talk about the topic at all? That'd be great. You know? And I'm like, that moderator sucked. You got to get it back in control, and you got to call on people. Don't just let those two people keep talking on and on. You got to say, hey, you know, you on the end, what do you think of this vintage horror movie?
We haven't heard enough from you. Let's get you to chime in. You're exactly when I've seen panels run really well or really poorly, it's often that some people are just microphone hogs. They don't get a sense of, okay, if there's four people up here, we should all get about 25% of the time. Say your thing, you know, get it done and get out. Give somebody else a chance, and that doesn't always happen.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So
they did have another good panel was on the worst movies of all time. Joe Waz did a great segment of course it was Plan 9 from Outer Space. It was Manos, The Hands of Fate. You know, some of them are horror movies, but also like Tiptoes, which I had never heard of before, but it's got like Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale and stuff like that. And then the rest of the cast are all little people. I'm not sure what the appropriate term for that is now, but I think
little people
is okay, right?
The ones that would have been Ewoks or that. Time Bandits.
And Peter Dinklage is in it, who now, like, his star has risen from Game of Thrones and various other things that he's been involved in. But back then, he might have just been known as one of the recognizable little people.
Right.
And so it's like he even commented on some of these movies. It might have been that not only are they the worst movies of all time, but there's been an active campaign to submerge them, that the people who are in them don't want them out there to be seen. And like, nobody wants to put them on the streaming services because you know that you're going to get, what the hell is this?
You know? There's a new movie out called Sasquatch Sunrise or something like that. And I've been hearing a lot of things about it. I think it's just so oddball and out there. People don't know what to think about it, and whether it's good, bad, or what you think of it, it's like those, everybody wants to see it just because it looks so freaking weird.
Exactly. One of the things he had, like, you know, the characteristics of what makes a great bad movie isn't that you set out to make a bad movie. You actually wanted to make a good movie, and then somehow it went off the rails. It had problematic things. So the sincerity of some of these things, a movie called The Room, for instance, that the guy totally overacts, but he thinks he's making just the movie that he wants to. And so after a while, you wince at the start. Then you're like, I want to see what this guy thought was his best work. I just want to see it. I want to be there. So,
right. So
that was kind of fun. It overall, a good con and so forth, and just kind of what I expected to be nowadays. Now that I'm not hunting through the comic book boxes looking for my want list and stuff like that, it really is a very different experience, and it has been for like 15 years now. You know, I stopped actively pursuing things, but I look for what's a comic. I got a comic book that is a reversal of the John Wick books, where it's the dog that actually goes rogue, starts killing people, saves them, and it's called Good Boy. So, and of course Good Boy is decked out with the bandolier and the, you know what I mean, the action shotgun and stuff like nice. That but the artwork was funny, and sometimes when you talk to people, you're like, you're an interesting enough fellow that I just want to like sponsor your art a little bit, you know what is it, $5-$10, sure.
and you know, that's the other thing with the con over the weekend and the one you were at, and you know, we're the same, we like to support people, but honestly, if I bought one or two books off every book table, I'd spend $500-$600 on books for the weekend. And I will probably only read a few, you know, but I like to support, but the problem is, and I've done this a lot with the comics up at the Fan Expo and all that. I'll see someone that, oh, well, what's your comic? Well, that sounds good. I'll try it out. And then literally one out of 20 is actually worth reading and good. And the rest just sucks so bad. And you get burned and you're like, nah, I don't want to try somebody I've never heard of. You know, there's the other bit of advice. Sorry, authors, sorry, comic artists and all that. You really need to just keep making them so your name gets out there and people start hearing you. So when they recognize you, that's when they buy. But if they've never heard you, they're like, I've gotten burnt. I'm not wasting $10, $15 on a book, you know?
Yeah, I will say this. So I the Hellman book that I bought, and I'm going to say the truth. So, you know, okay, I'll try the first in the series. That'll be $15. Well, it says $11.95 on the back. You've actually got a little price seal. And it's like, well, that's for tax and our signatures. And it's like, You know, like you if you had said, would you round it up, then I'll do it. But the fact that you just kind of like, so tax, let's see, 8% times 12, that'll be another buck. And like, you guys are not well known. So I don't get it for their signature. I don't buy a book and then turn around and put it on eBay. But the fact that they were pseudo charging for their signature, if it would have said, we made it 15 so that it's, we don't want to deal with singles. This way it'll all be fives and tens and everybody,
yes.
All those things would have been better than the
even better
subterfuge of raising the price at the con. If anything, yeah. It's usually a better price at the con.
Yeah, even better. You know? They should have dropped it to 10, just yes. Eat that buck and a half and sold way more. Because that's the other thing. If you've got just one book out or two books out, you need to get people reading your book to give you reviews, right. To give you clicks and likes and all that. Give it out for 10 and you'll eat that just maybe and ask them, hey, could you give me a review? I'd love it. It would help me out. And you'll get a couple. And there was one guy. Oh my God. Here's the other word of advice. And you'll cringe at this one too. Everybody at the conference, there were some books for 10. Mm-hmm. There were a whole lot of books for 15. That's about average price of a full novel that you buy paperback. Sure. There were some for 20. That was bigger ones. That was well-known people, whatever. Right. So that was the most of it. So this one book I was like super interested in, it was a horror anthology and all the stories were written by people on the spectrum. So I'm like, okay, that really fits what I like. And let me try this out. So I'm like, how much is it? $18. And I like blinked and looked at him and I'm like thinking $18, dude. I'm like, get a bookmark and then charge 20, you know? But I'm like, okay. And I handed him a 20. He goes, oh crap, I don't have any change. Who the hell goes and makes their book $18 and doesn't have a stack of ones? You're an idiot.
Exactly.
And he wasn't on the spectrum. So before everyone jumps on me, he just collected and edited it. He wasn't on the spectrum. And he's like borrowing ones off his neighbors. I'm like, you're in trouble the rest of the day, man. You know,
honestly, at one point when I did pay for like something for $8 and it like the five and the singles and they were like, thank you so much for this. Like, man, if you didn't prepare, don't count on Samaritans like me who happen to have small bills in their wallet.
Yeah.
Everything nowadays is, you know, pay with your phone, pay with your credit card, whatever else it might be. So maybe they don't think of cash transactions as much.
Yeah.
You can't stop a sale as being possible, right. Because you didn't have change. I'll say this one as well. There was a book that looked really good artwork wise. And I think it was something like Dire Wolf or Lone Wolf or something like that. Werewolf art. He had one book that was like an omnibus edition and it actually had like the claw marks through the cover, you know, where you open it up and then there's a full thing here, but it's the $50. And I'm like, wow, I don't know your work that well. And I like this cool effect. But I would have, like, I might have gone from 20 to 25 because of the cool torn through cover. It being the most expensive book at the con here, you're asking me to take a big risk. And I kind of said, $50, I can't. And so hopefully he got a little bit of feedback about maybe he didn't get that many printed and maybe it really is, you know, for true fans only or whatever else it might be. But that just seemed also like a misstep. Read the room, look at what everybody else thing is priced around you. If you're trying to, and he had individual issues for something like 5, 7, 10, that it would have been, and that's its own, you know, comic books, as you know, are no longer $195 or anything like that. Everything is more expensive, but still, $50 for something that I don't have any experience with, that's kind of what I'd pay for a signed edition of the Steranko omnibus. You know what I mean?
Right. So two comments. The only people that deal with cash and ones and stuff that don't have to worry about change are strippers. So, you know, if you aren't a stripper, you need lots of change, folks. Number two, see that thing with the cool cover. $50. Okay, you have that. You have the big $50 sign. You'll get people looking at it going, wow, that's cool. But you know, $50. Like, well, you know what? I've got that exact same story in this volume, but it's just a plain paperback. I got a regular hardback without the cool cover. It's $25, but I got a paperback that's only $15. You offer those price points. If people are interested, they'll be much more. Oh yeah, $15. That's a better price, and they get it. But if all you have is the 50, or if all you have is the 15, less people get it. That's the other thing.
You're exactly right. To have that range of possibilities and be able to, like, once you've already got them in the booth and they're a live one, you should be able to, like, somehow say what will match your needs and expectations by price points and by the thickness of the volume and whatever else it might be.
Right.
I'll also say this, the cosplay was great. You know, everybody, so many, like, it was well attended. It must have been more than 20,000 people there from the crowds and from my experience of past cons. So lots of people in cosplay, and I really love seeing that, but especially like the people that went up there to be in the parade, like articulated wings, you know, where they do a little flex and the wings go out, and some people, like, you know, honestly, full leather with all kinds of zippers and things like that, if we're playing that character. One guy that couldn't go up on stage because his 8 foot tall costume also had like legs that you had to work in a certain way, and they weren't going to be able to make it up the little steps. It's not a ramp. It's that. So the amount of craft that goes into some of these perfect costumes, and, you know, I don't know, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm like 64 years old and I don't want to be the dirty old man. You know what I mean? I try to appreciate that there's beautiful women in beautiful costumes and men. And I'll often say, wow, that's really a great costume. And can I get a picture? But I also am like almost held back from it because I so much don't want to be that guy. Yeah. And so when there's like a good Star Wars grouping or something like that, I'll jump in where they're taking a picture and get one as well. And when they were all up on stage, they already know that everybody is going to be taking pictures. And so then I'm kind of allowed to do that. But I'm just aware that I so much don't want to be, they had good signs up there saying cosplay is not consent. You know, don't put your hands on people.
Yeah.
Don't put too much into their space and stuff like that. And I so much want that to be the case, because for anybody who is shy and putting on a costume is some way of overcoming that shyness, I so much don't want that turn into a bad experience.
Right.
And that someone pawed them or someone, you know what I mean? Someone ogled them too much, that kind of thing. Even though, having said that, and you have talked about that, like if you're wearing something that is quite revealing, you shouldn't be surprised when people say, wow, that's quite revealing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, and just
or some guy is jaw drop staring. I mean, you know, I'm not saying I'm condoning it, but I mean, you know, life is what life is. Sex sells. We should know that.
Anything skin tight and all that kind of stuff. So I just, I think that it's kind of like a proving ground. It's a place where they get to see if usually I'm like, you know, the Velma of the world, and then I go Daphne, you know what I mean? That you're going to get more and perhaps a different kind of attention. And do you want it? Can you handle it? It isn't that you can, like,
and some, you know, some women especially do, you know, so that causes that problem. Well, the last three girls dressed like a skimpy Superman had no problem with this. Why do you? And, you know, again, you know, it's a rough thing, but I'll tell you, Al, if you ever do, once again, wear your Speedo superhero outfit, I'll get a picture with you.
You know, it's just that, especially if I get just the right pose, right. The ripple of muscles, you know what I mean? Just that, you know, let me just, can I hold my gut in for 3 days of a con? Close, I can probably, you know, I will say this, having said that little, almost unpleasant thing, it really isn't an unpleasant atmosphere. Everybody there is wonderfully accepting of everybody's taste, everything they want to do. And I'm it's by being Fan Expo, it's no longer just a Comic-Con. It's got all the different fandoms. And so even if I don't know the various different characters that they might be portraying from anime or video games or things that I'm just not familiar with, you can still tell they love that character. They made that costume beautifully, perfect. It matches them. And everybody else really seems to be much more appreciative. There isn't at all the vibe of some like construction workers sitting outside whistling at women. It just isn't that. It's much more safe and much more accepting and much more enthusiastic about, good for you. You made that great costume. You always wanted to play, I don't know, a stormtrooper or whatever else it might be. I just think that that's one of the, a great place in the world for all of that to come together and everybody be appreciative instead of sexist or comfortable about it. You know what I mean? It's not only whether you're aggressive about it, it's also there's nobody tisking there. Don't even come to the con if you're worried about, hey, somebody dressed up as Red Sonja. It's not up to you to alter, you know, it's up to you to alter yourself, not to make judgment on it. This is all of what's out there in all of fiction and comics and movies and everything like that, and just you should be prepared to see everything. You know what I mean? So they had all kinds of fun, like photos from the various different events after the con. They had like a drink and draw, and they had the anime thing over at the Velvet Room and stuff like that. And it sure seemed that people were having a wonderful time. They're still in costume, dancing away. I love that. I love that this becomes that little nexus of the universe where everybody can kind of be whoever they want to be.
And those type of things, my buddy Zach down in Tennessee, he writes zombie apocalypse books. And they're good stuff. And there's a vampire series he's got and things like that. And he always did all the author events, the book festivals and all that. And then he went and set up at the equivalent of Fan Expo down there where he was. He's like, oh my God, I sold more books this weekend than I've ever sold anywhere. He's like, screw all the others. Yeah. You know, come to one of these. I've looked at it and thought about, but tables are expensive for vendors. It's like $450 to do that. So you really got, so that's the other problem. You know, you got a lot of money sunk into it. You need people to buy stuff again. Right. Don't have one book because one book will never make you enough.
And also, like, if you're at your table, don't you want to have like 1, 2, 3 people at the table so that you can take breaks and go
look around
and stuff like that? So there really were, I know there were a couple of booths that seemed to be one person and they were rooted to that table. And I felt kind of bad for them. You know what I mean? That they're stranded. They're in the middle of all this coolness. And they're like, I got the view of what's across the aisle for me. And that's it. Oh, well. Oh, yep. Well. So another one, I told you, it's segue time.
Segue.
Interview was Sam Raimi, who was there. And of course, he has a long, wonderful career in the Evil Dead movies and Spider-Man movies and Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and Multiverse of Madness. And so then just last night, I went to see Spider-Man 1.
That was
here in Cleveland.
The Tobey Maguire one.
That's exactly right. They're doing a thing where, like, for the next 9 weeks, I think there's 9 of them, they're every Monday night at the 7 o'clock, they're showing them in order. And I just, you know, for, I don't know, like a Monday night $7 ticket, you've talked about that could be a Monday night, it's a good night to go. You know, popcorn thing is at a discount, movies at a discount. It was wonderful. It has held up very well. It's from 2002. So 20 plus years ago of, I don't know, advancement in special effects, advancement in how we do comic book movies and stuff like that. It's not only Tobey Maguire, it's Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane. And already, if you're a Spider-Man purist, it's like, it was Gwen Stacy back then. But anyway, Willem Dafoe, I have in my mind not thought of him well from that movie because I thought that he overdid it. He kind of hammed it up. But in this case, I thought he really did a good job of the subtler Norman Osborn, where he's still trying to be like a good father to his son, Harry, and a corporate mogul and stuff. But then he takes his, you know, version of the enhancement formula and it makes him mad and hyper aggressive and stuff like that. And so all the cackling that he does was kind of in line with you've gone insane and you're going to really, you're putting on a green costume and flying around on a bat glider. That would kind of go all together with you know, that kind of
stuff. I always liked that movie. I mean, of course, Spider-Man was my thing. And I'm like, oh my God, a Spider-Man movie. So I loved it when it came out, you know, and I still love it. I know some people are like, eh. I know Colin always says, well, you know, Tobey Maguire was like almost 30. He wasn't really a high school. And I'm like, yeah, did you ever go watch Grease? I mean.
And also, when that movie came out, I thought they found Peter Parker. I think Tobey Maguire absolutely most looks like the comic
great.
Steve Ditko version, et cetera, et cetera. And he, for whatever the age difference might have been, he had captured that like teenage naivete and innocence. And you know what I mean? Like with the whole, also Cliff Robertson was Uncle Ben, who like they really got some heavyweights involved. I don't remember who Aunt May was, but you know, J.K. Simmons from the start as J. Jonah Jameson, he was a great scenery chewer upper.
There's so no other choice for that one.
Exactly. So it really was, all of what the wonder that I got from seeing the first Superman movie of You'll Believe a Man Can Fly. They so much, Raimi really did it great. Maybe that's exactly why he had to be the guy to do this. Having seen the Evil Dead movies and seeing all his various different special camera stuff, where he like, you know, an arrow gets shot and he follows the arrow, like, you know, through the doorway and like a continuous shot where there's no sign of the camera didn't ride on top of the arrow to get to where it was going to embed itself and stuff. Seeing Spider-Man first, web slinging, you know, swinging through the canyons of New York City and him experiment with doing it, and then him getting better at it. It's just the right real life version of what was portrayed in comic books that probably couldn't have been done for a long time. It's vertiginous. It really is. While you're doing it, you're getting all the gravity is just right for how the downward tug would be there. And then when you go and let go, you do like that little weightless moment while you're flipping around and grabbing onto the flagpole and stuff. It was fantastic. And the fact that they could do that 22 years ago, like, wow. They pulled out all the stops to make sure that that part of the movie was just what it should be. That the combat scenes and you know, him clinging to walls, him being able to do the acrobatic and stuff, it really was fantastically well done. So the fact that it's the very first one, they knew what they were doing with Spider-Man very early on.
Yeah.
You know, simply like Iron Man, you know what I mean? They really did a good job early on of this is how those powers might work. And if you're showing kind of the origin story, they're not going to be immediately good at it. You're going to have to show them learning how much they can lift and right. what they can do when they swing around and maybe they miss once in a while and stuff like that.
And I know? Definitely agree with you on how good he was. I wasn't as pleased with Garfield at first, but I think that was more, you know, staking my, well, Tobey Maguire is my Spider-Man, you know. But then I went and watched it again. I'm like, you know what? In his own way, he does it just right. You know, it's like a different era. He's good with the quips and he's got the lanky body and he, you know, twists around. Tom Holland, I think, even nails it even more so. I think Tom Holland just.
All three of them have been great. You know what I mean?
And that last movie with all three of them together, I mean, blow your mind.
Yes, that's what you live for as a fan, is that absolutely. They're well aware of, you know, when they've had the movies where all the incarnations, like you've never had like a James Bond where they had multiple James Bonds,
right.
but had all the Spider-Man because of the multiverse concept and stuff like that. And you and I have talked about this, not the Knock on the Cabin Door, but the Cabin in the Woods, where they have all the monsters at the end. Spoiler alert, I know it's out there for 20 years, right? Just to see that, to see Ready Player One, and to see Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and to have all of these characters from multiple studios, universes, and stuff like that interacting. It's an overwhelming joy to a person who loves that field, and they really get to see all those guys together. It's really cool.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And that I personally loved that last movie with all three of them in it. I thought, you know, again, there's a lot of naysayers and people like, meh, this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, I don't talk to you people anymore. I liked it. Shut up.
Well, another thing Sam Raimi talked about, he was gifted by the people that he got. Like, I think the next one is Doc Ock, right? And then he started to have, like, for instance, this one was uncharacteristic because it really had one main villain. The Green Goblin is villainous enough, and there's enough plot going on of introducing what's going on in Spider-Man's world that they didn't do the Batman thing where it's like, well, you can't just have Bane. Let's throw four villains in there. And every single one is kind of an annual where you versus the Sinister Six. And that can be its own kind of coolness. But some of those characters are so important that you shouldn't have like the Joker and somebody else. It should just be the Joker,
right?
Or Mr. Freeze or the Riddler. And I know I jumped to Batman now, but you know what I mean? That's the biggest crime to me is the fact that they've overloaded them somehow because they weren't sure that it would be enough.
Yeah. My buddy Brian always complains that, you know, they have a movie one and done, you know, villain and he's gone and never see him again in our movie. I'm like, but dude, I would not want to have a trilogy of movies that have the same, you know, bad guy. It's like, come on, we already did that. Move on. That's mostly why they do it. And he's like, no, you know, it could build it and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I think you're wrong. And I will say, I love my buddy Brian to death, but he's wrong quite often about movie stuff. But what got me was we went and saw Star Wars, Force Awakens, and he hated it and bitched and complained because, well, that was just the same as the other one. It was a desert planet and a big world killing machine. I'm like, dude, you're the one always saying to redo this stuff. They did it. Yeah, they should. I was like, oh my God, make up your mind.
Somebody at a panel made a very good observation. Maybe it was even Sam Raimi, that when they do sequels, it isn't that if there's a bad sequel, it spoils the series. You can still go back and watch that first movie and recapture the wonder, the reason that it inspired a sequel, because it's so great.
Yeah.
And so they talk about that sometimes that you know, well, now the series is dead to me. It's like, man, if you can almost go back and rewatch the good ones, and you can even like just say, that's not in my canon. That's not
what I think of that Star with
Wars, or Star Trek or whatever else it might be, you know? So
right. Yeah, absolutely. So, the eclipse, you mentioned that earlier. Did you guys have a good time up on the farm?
We really did. So, boy, it was perfect. Up until like the morning of, we really weren't sure that we were going to have the weather to do it. It actually
Right.
even rained the morning of Monday here in Cleveland, and that. But then the forecast said it'll be clearing up, partly cloudy, and so I kind of sent the thing out, via Facebook. Well, Colleen and I will be doing it out of like stubborn optimism. We're going to go, and if the parts, the clouds part, we're doing it. So we ended up having dozens of people. We had, potluck goodies, and so everybody brought so much. We had a groaning board of good stuff. The eclipse itself was perfect. It started at, let's see, 3 in the afternoon, just about, went on for 4 minutes. But for all the lead up to that, when the moon first starts to occlude the sun, we all had our eclipse classes that we, the of course, I keep saying ANSI, but it's not that, ISO certified, that you're not going to burn your eyeballs out of your head. We had all dragged our lawn chairs out to a field, a little bit wet because there had been rain. So you're like a little bit in not mud, but in wet dirt. But it's like, trees around without being in the way of what you're going to be seeing, and perfect temperature. It got to be like 70 that day. So instead
Yeah.
of standing around shivering, saying, "Come on, eclipse, come on, eclipse," it was just kind of basking in the sun and enjoying this thing. And then for an hour, it creeps across. They get to totality, where it really is that last move into the moon, to where there's a big flash because it's the last of full
Right.
sunlight. And it was 70 up until then, or I think it dropped from 63 to 53 within a couple minutes of the
Yeah.
sun going away. That's how much heat and light and power we get from the sun, which is really a cool thought. All the things happened just like you've heard. There was a horizon sunset all around us. You know what I mean? Instead of being only in the east or only in the west for sunrise and sunset, all that's around that. There's around the
Yes.
ring, there's like little tiny flares, red spots and stuff, and the mountains on the moon are what caused it, because there it's not exactly a smooth surface. And
Right.
so it wasn't, what would you call it, sparking out where it was hurting your eyes or anything like that, but you could just tell that it was constant. There was movement along that ring because things were getting differently occluded based on exactly the combination of surface of the moon and light from the sun and stuff like that. There was at least one spurt, a prominescence, that came out at one point during that. And then, if you didn't see it, folks, boy, what an opportunity you missed. It's like nothing else you ever
Yeah.
see and feel and experience. All the animals got quiet except the crows.
Yeah, we heard a lot of birds.
Isn't that if I, we had it before down in Tennessee when we saw it 7 years ago, that everybody got quiet. But for whatever reason, all the other chirpy things got, but the calls from the crows, like, are they smart enough to go, "What's going on? What, this isn't our usual et cetera time." It was very interesting that everything got quiet and dark. You could see the rush of the shadow as it
Yeah.
came across the field going, and it goes at like, I don't know, 1800 feet a second or something. It's
Yeah.
quite quick, but you could see the advancement of it, and just everybody had that shared experience. So while it's going on, some people had set up tripods and they got great pictures. I kept trying to just capture things with my iPhone, and even that 1% of light, or 1/100 of a percent of light, is enough to overwhelm the filters on your phone and stuff. So I have a lot of, like, a big white
Glare.
ball, a little dark in the center, and it's there's still so much sunlight that I couldn't, and I had done no preparation of, was there an app that would have done more filtering for me? Probably, and I didn't have it.
I took an
So
extra pair of glasses and ripped out the filter and taped it over my lens.
was so smart. I should have done that too. We I don't know, Nick and Kelly were there. They were wonderful hostesses. They had actually brought electric out, so we had like two hot water urns that we could make instant coffee and tea and that kind of stuff. So everybody had, we were ready to needing warm-up drinks, and instead we more needed a cooler with some ice in it. Just so collegial. Everybody that came out, most of them were Cleveland area Mensa, some from Ecom. But actually we had people like from Pittsburgh that had been, we had gone to a party down in Cincinnati the previous weekend that was the foreplay, to the eclipse. And so then some people, when they knew that we were going to this place, if it's right in the band of totality and duration, they came up and joined us, Dave and Charlie.
Nice.
So it just, it was having said that, we had one person that had resvipped, and then a couple days before they said, I won't be able to join you. I can't get off of work. And I'm like, what Simon Legree are you working for that there's this awesome once-in-a-lifetime event? Stay at your desk. Stay at your counter. Oh, that's
yeah,
just...
I actually...
said, I hear you, but I'm going away for 2 hours. You're not taking this from me.
Right. I actually had a meeting during that time. But I mean, they're based in Florida, so they didn't even have this going on. Okay. So okay. I... usually I'm not part of the meetings. So what I did was I just cranked it up and opened the window and I was outside. And if I heard my name, I came running back in. So okay. I'm like, could you repeat that? What was that? You know, I'm like, okay, great. I'll tell you in a minute. Hold on, click and run back outside.
They must have known that you were seeing the eclipse. They must.
Well, I had mentioned it earlier and I said, okay. Sam, why at this time is there? Well, it's the time everybody can meet. My God, bless America. But I had a neighbor and another friend. You know, so what'd you think? Oh, we just watched it on TV. What? Step outside your door. It's right there.
Exactly. And to feel the temperature change and to see the, oh, well, I hope that everybody that did it had a wonderful time. The next one on the North American continent, if I'm right, is like 2044. So we just got to make it 20 more years. I think we can do that. Colleen and I'll still be around, even if we're like hobbling a little bit. And I don't remember where it is, but it's like not, by saying North American continent, I think I'm being kind. It's like, way up in Canada, or it's way down in Texas or something like that. It would be a trip for us to get there. And yet how cool.
I saw
a lifetime. Wow.
Well, there's a year coming up. I don't know what the year is, but Spain has three going across it, three eclipses.
Interesting. Here in the United States, you know, we had just 7 years ago and now Carbondale, Illinois was the place that was the intersection of those two swaths as they came across the United States. And Carbondale is known as maybe of the U of I system, University of Illinois, the party school. So who knows what was going on each of those events. Nice.
So speaking of all of this, another interesting celestial happening, and this is not something we are going to make it to, unfortunately, that I guess because of our tilt and wobble of the Earth as it's been spinning, that something like 20,000 years ago, we used to have a different North Star. It was not always Polaris. And we are wobbling back that sometime over the next 26,000 years, we're going to be pointing to a different North Star again.
I had never read that. I mean, I kind of thought
me neither.
I'll go read more. You know what I mean? Because I really thought that after they've taught us all how to use the Big Dipper to point, and then this, and that's true north, and that's how they did all of that sea navigation and stuff like that. And I guess, yes, 26,000 years ago, nobody was around to say, hey,
right,
same one. So very interesting. Okay.
Yeah. You know, there's so many things we still, you know, I mean, it's not like it's something like, well, nobody knew that. Well, yeah, we kind of did. It just wasn't something that people like kept track of for 26,000 years, you know?
That's right. It is worth, like, the fact that we have the ability to go back and say, well, based on axial tilt and how it's shifted, right. And they've talked, I know I've read this, that at one point the pole shifted, you know, north went to south because of a big change in the magnetic field of the Earth. So it's not that those big celestial events, that's a bad term, the cosmic events, big events, haven't happened before, but to be able to put it so precisely by doing all the modeling and extrapolation and stuff, that's very cool that we can really know that it would have pointed different. You know what I mean? That would have been, for anybody who was trying to make their way across the tundra or the, you know, the primitive tribes going, did they use celestial navigation? Maybe they did. That was what they had available, was look up in the sky. And if those are where we always expect to see them, then you would make use of them. You
right.
know? So, okay.
So, yeah, cool stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else before we bug out?
I'm trying to think. I just finished the third in the Girl Who Could Move Shit With Her Mind series. And they're very entertaining. That, you know, it's a little bit like X-Men. People are being born with abilities. And in this case, sometimes children that are being captured by a school to either train them to use their powers wisely, or perhaps train them into being little weapons of mass destruction. If you can cause earthquakes, if you can bring down the lightning and stuff like that. And so there's a good combination of action sequences and intrigue and the interaction between characters. You know, there's a motley crew of people that are the response team and stuff like that. And they're written from, like, I don't know, a young teenage or maybe a young woman's viewpoint. So a lot of irreverence and swearing and emotionality that isn't like hearing a seasoned spy talk about a situation. She makes all kinds of overreactions and bad choices and is aware that she's doing it, but she's just like, I'm making this up as I go along. I'm not the hero here. And yet she has to be, because she's got these telekinetic powers that enable her. And this was the cool thing about this latest book was, at one point she gets spattered with methamphetamine, and it very much enhances her powers. And then, like, do you keep doing it? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this drug is a bad drug. It will kill you. It'll rot the teeth out of your head, et cetera, right, et cetera. But, and so it's like, if especially she has to make a big decision as there's a flash flood coming, and I will not at my usual power level be able to do anything about it. But if I risk addiction, risk death to do this. And so they're big. I love series where there's actually, like, you know, a part of what I put in my presentation was, you know, all of us have powers, and with great power comes great responsibility. You really have to, like, practice your moral judgment. That's why you should read more comic books and heroic fiction, is because with all the malevolence and, like, banal evil that we see going on, you know, we've got court hearings that it hurts to pay attention to how scurrilous people can be, how they can be that greedy and lie, never stop lying. It hurts to see that those people are actually on the national scene, instead of somebody having said the emperor has no clothes and we as a society pushed them aside. And so at least in your little sphere of influence, you have to be the one that steps up and says, that's not right. That doesn't make any sense. That's a lie. I hope that people from reading these kinds of things, you get a chance to experience what it would be like to be a hero, and then be that hero when the opportunity comes. You know what I mean? So that's, I love reading things for that reason.
Which makes it hard to go to Fan Expo without blowing tons of money.
And there is that too. Find, like I said, little sunshine earrings for Colleen. So that was, you know, as a guy, you love to adorn your lady, and she really liked them and that kind of stuff. So it, I don't know. I think I got like a Batman bag, you know, that was my, I didn't even get a t-shirt this year. Almost always I pick up a con shirt or something like that, but I know we're going over.
No, final that's thing. Okay.
There's a great progressive rock festival called Progstock that takes place in New Jersey in October. And the lineup this year is really good. It's got Gong, who really don't often come over from Europe. It's got 6x6, which is Robert Berry's latest group. And who has Robert Berry worked with? Like Keith Emerson. You know what I mean? Right. So he plays a certain amount of ELP music. Saga is the main line. And I think I've told you, there's a song they have called On the Loose that is one of my biggest, like, energizing songs. The minute I hear that first, I'm like, I get my hairs stand up, because I'm just so like, oh yeah, this is a great song. I can, you know what I mean? So it's, instead of having one or two headliners and a whole bunch of filler, it really seems to have like two great headliners a night, and then they'll still have all these other bands. So if you're at all into progressive rock and don't even have to pay the cruise boat prices, this go to, you know, Rutherford, New Jersey in the middle of October, and you'll be a happy boy. Happy girl.
Well, you know, talking about all the festivals and stuff, between me and Casey with the soaps and my author events, and so going to both cryptids and book events and author events, it's like two a month all the way through most of the rest of the year.
So you're running out of weekends.
Okay. Yeah, running out of weekends. And you know, I'd really love to go to that, but I can go to this one and maybe get my book out, make a couple bucks. But it's a cryptid event, so I still get to hear a good speaker if I got somebody at my booth for a few minutes, or get to walk around and spend the money that I'm earning.
Yeah. Colleen and I were just talking about that instead of having to do big vacations, we're going to do a little more like war road trips, you know, from Cleveland. You can make it into New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan, all different kinds of places. And all you need is an excuse. Let's go see that cemetery where all the magicians are buried. Let's go back to Letchworth, which is the Grand Canyon of the East. And let's go to a Civil War battlefield. Let's go to Williamsburg or something like that. And so we're planning it. It's only April. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of time off, summer, that kind of stuff. We're planning those little 2-3-4 day road trips just to go, why not drive down to Hocking Hills in Ohio, an absolutely beautiful place, and do some hiking and things like that. So hey everybody, get out of your 50 mile radius from when you were born, go explore the world. That's a good idea too,
right? Yep. All right, man, take care. Go explore.
Always a pleasure. Okay.
This has been the Relentless Geekery Podcast. If you enjoy our conversation, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and go give us a review. Give us some likes. It would help a lot. Check out our website, relentlessgeekery.com, where we have links to our Facebook page, join the conversation, and go check out our YouTube page, where we have the video of this and other episodes. You have been listening to the Relentless Geekery Podcast. Come back next week and join Alan and Steven's conversation on geek topics of the week.